Good morning.
Good morning.
What an auspicious morning to start this great Buddha's enlightenment sesshin with the thunder and lightning and the rain. Only the rain actually happened, but it felt like the earth was moving. Yes. When I sat down this morning in the first period, my mind was a little busy thinking about sesshin, and all of its elements. I want to thank our Tenzo, who said that her sesshin started on Monday, which is true for all Tenzos. And I want to thank our Eno Liz, who puts together the structure of the sesshin block by block, several days before we actually sit down. I want to thank our head student who has been putting together Rohatsu sesshin breath by breath, all practice period. I think just another example of the unborn, undying nature of our practice. We may have prepared the causes and conditions for the bell at 5:45 this morning, but the sesshin for all of us had no beginning. And 7 days from now, when we're throwing flower petals into the air and chanting the Heart Sutra at the top of our lungs, we'll know that this isn't the end of this undying practice of sitting or sesshin or enlightenment. I wish I were thinking about these thoughts that first period. I was thinking more mundane thoughts about meal practice or when the Dokusan list needs to go up, or you know, when to chant what and who's going to be participating in those chants. And so I went back to our old friend, meeting the breath by breath by breath, paying attention to the inhale the exhale, maybe because of the humidity in the air, there seemed to be, it seemed to kind of flow in and out like warm nectar, filling the lungs, coming out of the lungs, nurturing, cleansing. This breath practice, Catherine said, our breath is our religion. It really brings our energy of mind and body right back here to our home, when we can start paying attention to the breath. If my energy or my thoughts was out there at meal practice or bulletin board practice, out there, getting back to this sweet nectar of my breath really brought it right back into my body and into this spot, and permeated my whole body and just helped me land right here on the cushion a little more solidly, with a little more stability. That's the reason that our first Zazen instruction talks about following our breath. It was also an early teaching by the Buddha in his Four Foundations of Mindfulness. Breathing in a long breath, I am aware of a long breath. Breathing out a long breath, I am aware of a long breath. So this is our ancient practice. This is our religion. This thing that is so, that is, you can't see breath. It's so vital, but it's invisible. It has no weight, and yet it grounds us in our body and settles us onto the ground, onto the cushion. Is vitally important, second by second, and yet, you know, where is it? Can you show it to me? Is it in my hand? This is our religion. Because we all started off following our breath, and because Buddha's disciples all started off following their breath, it's kind of our comfort food. It's our home cooking. There's always a big portion of it at the family meal. And for this reason, it takes that busy mind. I kind of liked my image last night of the dog playing fetch with any amount of stimulation that comes our way. That's how our mind is working. Any amount of stimulation, the mind just goes out there like a dog playing fetch. The breath is our comfort food that brings us back into the house, that brings us back into that grass roof hut and helps us settle down around that warm light. Next to the undying person in the hut. Catherine did lots of gestures around our breathing practice. It was expansion and contraction. Not only is it the rhythm of our body, it's kind of the way the universe is. Kind of, you know, wonderful rain, and then the drought. Expansion and contraction. Today my energy is up. Tomorrow my energy is down. In and out. Expansion and contraction. So it's got this familiar rhythm. Not only in our bodies, but in our experience of the world. Bodhidharma said, page 2. Okay. Calamity forever alternates with prosperity. Housing prices up, housing prices down. Obama It's pretty familiar, this breath, this rhythm, this cycle. And I think that's why it's our practice with the breath. Is so valuable to us. It takes us out of that endless game of fetch and back into the rhythm of our bodies, the rhythm of the universe around us. Those first few sesshins in Jokoji, Catherine wanted us to take advantage of being in the wonderful environment in the mountains there, so there was always a long period of walking meditation. And we were to walk by ourselves at a natural rhythm, but in a very short time everyone was walking very slowly, and the discussion afterwards reflected that everyone felt that the slow walking really matched the rhythm of the environment around them, to be able to be in accord with that rhythm, with the expansion and contraction of the meadows or the trees. It took a very slow pace. So we'll have the luxury, the privilege, the gift of many days of settling into the rhythm of our bodies and the rhythm of our environment, and appreciating the nourishment of the in-breath and the cleansing of the out-breath. As we settle into just this body, as we settle into just this space, and become intimate with this undying person in the hut of our bodies, A few contemporary Zen teachers have some ideas about this practice. We looked a little bit at what Judith Regier had to say about her Sesshin practice. Maybe I'll read it again. It's quite short. Maybe someday we can hear what Kathy said about practice in this wonderful collection of essays by contemporary women Zen teachers teaching about challenging times, Zen teachings in challenging times. And I went to Judith Regier's lecture because I've got some interest in her teaching. Let me just read again from last night. I learn from these sesshins how to use my body and mind to endure difficult circumstances that my whole being registers as adversive. This laboratory for life is what I call it. Teaches me how to get through periods of my day that I hate and want to avoid, but if I don't face them, it will cause even more suffering. This is the strengthening value of sesshin. It teaches us how to face difficulties without trying to run away. It provides us a spiritual stability that is unshakable, or nearly so. A spiritual stability. And that certainly is palpable in this practice. It was palpable this morning when I was playing fetch out there. And then just to come back to the breath and bring this energy back into this skin bag perched on the cushion. Aware of this great triangular plane that I've established with my knees and my sitting bones that keeps me firmly on the cushion. Aware of aligning the weight of my body with the force of gravitation to help me just settle in right here. So this practice of sesshin, this practice of stability, provides us spiritual stability that is unshakable. And then, not to go over it the way we did last night, but just to remind us that she appreciated her teacher Katagiri and his reminder that the Buddha has two arms, one of compassion and one of wisdom. The compassionate arm allows me to be gentle and love myself and others under any circumstances. The wisdom arm is where we get a true perspective over our life and our karma. What is life? Does it end? Where does it begin? Can I view my situation from the largest perspective that I have? So this is Judith's essay on sitting and sesshin, and she made this connection between stability of our sitting and our practice and the arising of compassion and wisdom, the two arms of the Buddha, the two sides of the coin. And as we sit amidst the rhythm of expansion and contraction, maybe we'll get up with the bell one time and we'll have that sensation that I'm not so worried about the meal practice. I feel nurtured right now. Maybe that's the compassion and loving kindness that is creeping into my body and mind that Judith Regeer said might happen. Let's be aware of getting up from the cushion and saying, you know, the person next to me was so calm throughout that last period. I really felt like she was supporting my practice, reminding me to just sit. I'm grateful for her and for the others taking part in Rohatsu today for helping me with my practice. Maybe we can be aware of when compassion and wisdom sneak in along with the breath and fill our body and mind. Another Zen teacher, Ishin Havens, She's described as a Native American, but has become a naturalized Brazilian. And has published much in Brazilian, and this is her first work in English. And I'm not so sure Native American means an indigenous person from the Americas, or whether it means she's from the United States and has now become a naturalized citizen. Do you know anything about her, Kathy? But she gives us a little background into Buddha's enlightenment. He had practiced asceticism with his fellow monks for several years, but having perceived that such extreme practice was not bringing him any closer to the answer for his search for freedom, he left them, and he had eaten a rice porridge given by the maiden Sujata, and sat under the Bodhi tree until reaching his goal of enlightenment. You know, the compassion of Sujata nourished the Buddha as much as the porridge. My mind is going that the compassion that filled his mind and body was not separate from his enlightenment. Entering as it did in his enlightenment sesshin, his enlightenment retreat that he set out for himself. Initially, his colleagues thought of him as a weakling, unworthy of respect. But coming closer, they perceived a special quality about him. Maybe that was that light from the undying person in the hut that was now illuminating all phenomena. They saw his Buddha nature for the first time, and he was illuminating their Buddha nature. I like what she said here. Emotions such as the sadness over the loss of a loved one often come in waves or rhythms. Some stimulus sets off the emotion, and there we are, feeling crushed in pain and loss. But if we can just stay with the emotion itself, without getting involved with it or trying to pretend it doesn't exist, the emotion will pass surprisingly quickly for the time being. until another stimulus causes another wave. With time, the waves might become spaced further apart, as well as starting to pass more quickly. She's talking about in meditation. Once again, underlining the stability of our practice, how it settles us, how it helps us see the natural rhythm of our bodies, as well as the natural rhythm of our minds and our emotions. In addition to some contemporary Zen teachings, I wanted to also bring in this Sesshin, some of our ancient traditional teachings. And because this Sesshin is so closely related to Buddha's sitting intensely, I wanted to talk about Bodhidharma as well, another one of our ancestors, 1,000 years after Buddha. Also known for the intensity of his sitting. And some of what Bodhidharma has to say is also about these rhythms and our stability. I might say a little bit more tomorrow about the personal history of Bodhidharma, and I can assure you it will just be a little more because so little is known about this ancestor of ours. But these four lectures, the Zen teachings of Bodhidharma, are pretty much what he said, maybe. But maybe he didn't say all of them just this way. Maybe it's a nice compilation of lectures that were in the theme of Bodhidharma's teaching at the time, that other people may have written down their thoughts or his thoughts. But certainly in the 1500 years since Bodhidharma, these have been attributed to him and his teaching. This first short lecture is here Red Pine translates it as outline of practice, but it's also called, in other texts, the essence of Mahayana teachings. Many roads lead to the path, but basically there are only two, reason and practice. To enter by reason means to realize the essence through instruction and to believe that all living beings share the same truth, which isn't apparent because it's shrouded by sensation and delusion. It's funny that that's the reason entryway. There's probably many reasons why the word reason was chosen here. To me, it sounds a lot more like it has to do with thinking through this practice, even though it's called believing that all things share the same true nature. I think reason has a connection with reality and maybe ultimate reality, and that's why it was chosen. But the practice side includes mainly how we practice in the world, how we walk with the same rhythms of the universe around us, how we stay in accord with body, mind, and environment. They have some surprises too that we'll get into. One practice that Bodhidharma recommends is that we suffer injustice, that we adapt to conditions, that we seek nothing, and that we practice the Dharma. And it's in that one of seeking nothing that Bodhidharma points to just being aware of the rhythms of life, where that line came from, that calamity forever alternates with prosperity, and that can we not just grab hold tightly to prosperity, nor should we reject or push away things that we think of as adversities? Can we seek nothing but just feel stable in our cushion, on our cushion, in our bodies, fully in accord with the in-breath, the out-breath, the expansion, and the contraction? Can we be fully here in our expansion? And can we be completely whole and accepting of our contraction? We'll see what more Bodhidharma says about that tomorrow, and what more some of our contemporary teachers say about practicing with life as it arises and expands, and life as it contracts away from us. May we be wholly a part of the arising and falling of our breath in our bodies and in our minds. And may this whole presence settle us into our cushions for the next few days. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma.